Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic, no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Season 5 of The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, where we talk with enterprise and technology platform leaders about the people, processes, and platforms that make marketing and customer experience successful, scalable, and sustainable. This is what creates an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advisor and consultant for Fortune 1000 marketing and CX leaders and teams as principal and chief strategist at GK5A and best-selling author, keynote speaker, entrepreneur, and Agile certified coach. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full stack technology services, talent services, and real world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. To sign up for the Agile Brand newsletter and get the latest insights and articles on marketing technology and CX, or to purchase a copy of my latest book, House of the Customer, go to gregkilstrom.com. You can also find all my books on Amazon and other retailers. And now on to the show. In this special episode brought to you by Cirrus Talent, we're going to talk about the value of the candidate experience in times where there are plenty of candidates or when there aren't nearly enough candidates for the roles available. While some approaches may change, the candidate experience is always important. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Sue Keith, Corporate Vice President at Cirrus Talent. Sue, welcome to the show.
Hi, Greg. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this with you. Why don't we start by you giving a little background on yourself as well as Cirrus Talent?
Sure. Well, I'll start with Cirrus Talent. So we are a boutique marketing recruiting firm. We're headquartered here with you in the DC metro area, although we do serve clients nationwide. And we're really proud that 2023 marks our 15th year in business.
Wow, congrats.
Well, thank you. We specialize in marketing roles from manager up to CMO. We like to say that we help fill any position a CMO needs, including the CMO. And we do interim contractors, let's say for maternity or paternity leave coverage, or head of marketing just needs another set of arms and legs. We do consult a perm, and we also do direct hires, direct placements. Everyone on our team spent the majority of our careers in marketing. So we like to say we speak the language and pretty good at the matchmaking.
That's wonderful. Well, so let's get started by talking about the candidate experience and why it's so important for marketing leaders and hiring managers to put a focus on it, regardless of things like economic conditions and the job market. So first, can you describe for me, how do you define the candidate experience?
I think it's important to appreciate that the candidate experience starts well before you receive the person's job application. You know, it starts with their first interaction with your company, which could have been years ago, and extends all the way through to their receiving a job offer and walking in the door, or the virtual door these days.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a wise colleague who's still a really good friend of mine once reminded me that a brand just isn't just about the company's logo or tagline. It's really how the brand makes you feel. And by the way, this also applies to people too. So if you think about when you hear someone's name, you have an instant reaction that's almost always either positive or negative, not somewhere in the middle there. And even if you can't remember any specific interaction you had with the person, maybe you worked with them 8 years ago and you can't really picture the meetings you were in, you're still going to have an innate response to their brand. So this applies to companies as well. So the candidate experience starts with how your company makes the applicant feel, whether that's because of your reputation or what your website says, you know, if your career page talks about why someone would want to work at your company. And then there's also Glassdoor reviews. I think most people know to take reviews with a bit of a grain of salt, but if there's a negative or positive theme or thread throughout the comments, that certainly can impact the candidate's view of your company. Yeah. And once the company has applied, then the focus shifts to how they are treated. So in this part, communication is key throughout the full cycle from application to interview to offer or not. Silence or big gaps in time between you make contact with a candidate basically communicates to that candidate you're not interested in them. Even if you are, they don't know that. And it just sends them a message that they should be focusing on other opportunities. The other critical component of kind of how you're treated is what I call closing the loop. So if you decide a candidate's not right choice, well, that's okay. But please let them know. You know, I can't tell you the number of times a marketing professional has told me that they went through a lengthy interview process, met a lot of senior level people at the organization, and never heard from the company again. And I've heard this from people at all levels, including very senior level marketers. This is a bit of an extreme example, but a very real example. A good friend of mine got to the point in the interview process a few years ago where she had reached the final step. The company was going to check references and then extend an offer. And then she never heard from them again. And to make things worse, she found out the position was filled when a colleague who knew her situation saw someone post on LinkedIn that they had just accepted the job that she thought she was getting. So pretty brutal. I understand some companies are wary. Their legal teams are probably wary of providing specific feedback to candidates because they're afraid of possibly being sued. And I understand that. But even if that's the case, you should still let the candidate know they're not moving forward, even if it's with a fairly generic email. The bottom line is hearing a no is way better than hearing nothing. And if you think about it from the other side, communication and closing loop are critical, if nothing else, to avoid burning bridges. That potential candidate that was ghosted may just be the hiring manager for the next job you want. So remember that people have long memories. And as I said earlier, they may not remember the specifics, but they'll certainly remember their experience, how their experience with you made them feel. So, the overall candidate experience it's pretty simple. Treat people with respect. So no matter if it's a buyer's or a seller's market, and I know we're going to touch on that in a little bit, but it really comes down with respect. And I should also mention that respect goes both ways. We saw plenty of candidates behaving badly over the past few years during the post-COVID hiring frenzy. So it's important for everyone to keep respect and really what boils down to basic common courtesy in mind.
Yeah. I know I had a guest on the show that was probably a couple of years ago at this point and worked for a very large company that hired a lot of people per year. And they actually assigned a value to, if we destroy this relationship in the hiring process, this is what it's going to cost us over their, over the lifetime of a customer. And, so they could assign a value to a positive or a negative candidate experience, even if they didn't hire that individual. So, definitely some organizations may not go to those lengths to assign that exact dollar amount to it, but your points are well taken. I mean, it's a small world out there and you never know who's going to be yes. hiring you or you're going to be hiring. And, I think it's good to try to be a good person, maybe it goes without saying, but
that's really interesting. I'd love to know the math behind how they did that valuation. I don't know how many companies really think through that end-to-end experience that I was talking about, that you can't know when someone may have heard of your company 2 years ago and didn't apply for a job until 2 years later. But you certainly can think through, at least the starting point is your careers page on your website. I've seen ones done really well that I want to apply for a job because they made it sound so exciting to work there and that they made me feel as though they really cared about the people they were going to talk to in the application process. And thinking that all the way through from that to what happens when the application comes in, and there will be a lot of them. So how do you manage that volume? And then the things that people think more about is really how is that interview process managed? How is the communication and the kind of closed loop piece that I talked about? How is that all done? And then at the very end of that, making sure that everybody who is considered for a position has been communicated to, whether the answer is a good one or not, right. They've been touched and that loop has been closed so that even if there's a way for someone to not get a job, but still feel really good about their experience with the company. And there are unfortunately more frequently ways for people to walk away feeling pretty awful about the experience. And as you said, that could come back in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, as we were preparing for this interview, you and I chatted a little bit about how there's this tendency to kind of change the approach of hiring and communication with candidates that's sometimes different between, you know, whether it's a buyer's market or a seller's market, or, you know, whether there's too many jobs available for the talent available or vice versa. What's the problem with this way of thinking, and how should hiring managers and leaders think about this instead?
That's a good question. And we're certainly seeing this right now with this, I won't call it a whiplash, what's happened in the hiring market, because it was more gradual than people may be aware. But yeah. We've certainly seen a bit of a 180 in the last, I'd say, 6 months. You know, as I mentioned, the hiring frenzy over the past few years really caused people to behave badly. And that's on both sides, both on the hiring side and the candidate side. I think regardless of the market, from a hiring perspective, I think regardless of the market and regardless of, you know, I hate to say this, but who has more leverage? Yeah. There are some basic tenets every hiring manager should follow. So I've touched on this already, but frequent communication. So if you think about it, every hour after a person has an interview can feel like a lifetime to that person. Even though it takes time and you're probably interviewing three or four people for the position and you have to get them to meet with the several people and you have to wait on everyone's feedback, you know, that person just interviewed and is dying to know, is there going to be a next step? So yeah. Even if you're not ready to make a decision or you decide you want to see some more people or consider some more people, stay in touch in some way. Even if it's not to give them any news, at least hearing from the hiring company makes someone feel at least they haven't been forgotten. It gives them a sense that, you know, what's next?
Yeah.
Also, be respectful of the candidate's time. You know, the interview process should not take months to complete. Yeah. And it shouldn't also ask someone to meet with, let's say, 10 different people and present two different presentations. And this is a true story. I had candidates go through something like this. I think when it comes to interviewing and how many people should be involved, there's, of course, the hiring manager, and there's a few key stakeholders with whom the new hire will be interacting fairly frequently, and people you want to have bought into the person you've chosen before that person even walks in the door. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you're just trying to hire by consensus, and that never works. And what can even happen, and this happened to us, our hiring manager was a CMO. It was a VP of product marketing position. She was in love with her candidate, but she wanted him to talk to one more person. And that person turned him so off, he called me and said, I don't care how much they offer me, I will never work there.
Wow. Yeah.
And so be careful too. I mean, there's key stakeholders, critical. When you start throwing in a whole bunch of other people because you can't make a decision, that can be risky. And, you know, we work with a lot of growth stage entrepreneurial companies. It's a good chunk of our client base. And, you know, they all tout their corporate culture as nimble and growth oriented. But if it takes you 3 months to move a candidate through the interview process and that person needs to talk to seven people, then that behavior is counter to what you say your culture is all about. Yeah. And if you look at it this way, if one of your employees was interviewing, would you want them to take, say, like 10 hours of the time you're paying them for during the day to actually be interviewing with another company? And that's just if they're interviewing with one company, much less fewer. Right. So I think, you know, keep that in mind of, you know, be respectful of a candidate's time and what you're asking them to do in terms of pulling them away from their day job. And another tenet is do what you say you're going to do. If you tell a candidate an offer is coming on Monday, make sure the offer comes on Monday. Or if it gets delayed, which it might, make sure to communicate that. Again, it goes back to, you know, every hour after you've been told you're getting a job offer feels like forever. So make sure that if you've made some promises about whether you're going to just next time you're going to hear back from them about next steps, or you're going to get an offer, just, you know, do what you say you're going to do. And then a few good practices we like to recommend. We really strongly suggest that the hiring manager extend the offer to the candidate personally, at least the verbal offer. Then you can have HR, your recruiting team, step in to follow up with more of the details and, you know, talk about starting dates to put in the letter and all that. But having the hiring manager call the person after they've been through this whole, you know, very stressful and somewhat painful interview process and have that person personally extend the offer to you is so much nicer than getting the call from HR.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice way to kick off what will hopefully be a long-term relationship with your new employee. The other thing we like to remind folks about is, there's a big gap between someone signs their offer letter and, well, typically signs their offer letter and their start day. If they're working, they're going to have to give at least 2 weeks notice. And likely they're going to ask for that third week where you have that period of what I call nirvana, where you're not working at all, but you have a job starting.
Right.
That's a really long time. And a lot of things can happen during that time, especially when it's a market like it's been where, you know, people were getting offers left and right. You know, we like to say things, a lot of things can go bump in the night during that period of time. You know, another company they had been interviewing with may swoop in with a better offer. Their current company may counter or continue to kind of make them feel guilty about leaving, or simply they have enough time to start having buyer's remorse. So what we see so often is the candidate signs the offer letter and then there's crickets until day one. And so we strongly suggest people keep in touch, whether it's you, the hiring manager, and or HR. If possible, send them some swag so they feel connected to the company as early as possible. But definitely make sure the person is continually feeling welcome and then therefore excited and knows really what to look for or expect when they're walking in the door. You know, to that point, for one of our candidates for VP marketing role, the CMO had developed a detailed onboarding plan for her first week. Meetings with stakeholders were already scheduled. Lunches with team members were booked. And, you know, even though the first few weeks of any new job, no matter who you are or how senior might be, are really stressful, she felt really welcomed and set up for success because he had taken the time to make sure there was a plan for her when she walked in the door.
Yeah.
And remember, the candidate experience that we started talking about earlier really goes all the way through the day they walk in the door. It doesn't stop at offer letter. And then employee engagement goes from there. One last thing on this topic, if I may.
Yeah.
Ensure you, the hiring manager, understand the specifics of your company's onboarding program. Even if it's the program is managed by your HR department or other groups, you know, we've seen examples where a new hire walks in the door and no one's ready for them. There's no desk, there's no computer, there's no plan for them to figure out how to enroll in benefits. So while, you know, some companies have more formal onboarding programs that are really led and managed by HR, others not so much. The responsibility to ensure a good first day experience really falls on the hiring manager to understand what that looks like, even if other departments are involved.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all great stuff. Yeah, I was meeting actually this morning with one of my consulting clients in the healthcare space. They actually have limited the amount of rounds of interviews that can happen to two. Which I thought was
really
a little aggressive.
I'm hearing angels sing right now.
Yeah, right. I know. I mean, a couple friends of mine, one did 10 rounds of interviews and at least eventually got the job. Another one did like 9 and didn't get the job. So either way, you can imagine the time commitment, you know, involved in all that, you know, in person and travel, and you know, some of them may have been virtual, but yeah. So I thought that was really, really good, and you know, it kind of forces everybody on the interviewing side to be really smart about, okay, get the right people in the room, and to your point, not everybody in the room, but like get the right people in the room and ask really smart questions right at the beginning and not wait till round 5, 6, 7, 8.
I love that. 2 does sound, I think you started to say this too. If they had said 3, I'd say, okay, that makes sense to me. Now, in some cases, you don't need 3. Like really, it depends on who your stakeholders, who you're going to be working with, because you want some buy-in for the sake of the new employee. You do want some buy-in to feel that the key people you're going to be working with have already met you and were involved in the decision to hire. But I also would argue that if, you know, you're a VP of marketing and you're hiring, let's say, a director of demand gen, and you're requiring that person to meet with 10 people, do you really have decision-making authority? Isn't your job to make big decisions for the team? So I would almost start to question that as well. So I think that's amazing. And I would love to see more companies appreciating that. I do. You know, we have that whenever we kick off a search with a new client, we have this conversation and everyone smiles and nods and said, oh yeah, absolutely agree. It just be a few. And then they want to add a fourth and then they want to add a fifth. And, you know, sometimes the fourth and fifth are actually make a lot of sense. Or sometimes we'll even say, hey, this is director of product marketing. You don't have someone from sales on this interview list. We would strongly recommend that because we'll be working so closely together. So occasionally we'll throw in an extra, but I think I think it makes sense. To limit it in whatever, in some capacity, makes a lot of sense.
While we're on the topic of the talent market, I wanted to share a little bit more about our sponsor, which is a company I've worked with, referred great talent to, and recommend to the marketing leaders I work with as an advisor and consultant, Cirrus Talent. A lot of times when you work with a staffing company, your candidate matches can be pretty hit or miss. Cirrus Talent is different because the founders are seasoned marketers themselves, and the company is focused exclusively on placing top talent in marketing and communications positions. They already speak the language of marketing and take the time to fully understand the requirements of the positions they're filling. As one of their clients said, because of their marketing expertise, they always really listen and completely understand exactly what I'm looking for in each search. For more information, go to www.cirrustalent.com. That's CERESTALENT.com. Or follow the link in the show notes. Now let's get back to the show. Well, let's switch gears here a little bit. One of the benefits of bringing you and Cirrus Talent onto the show is to benefit from your experience. You've already shared quite a bit of advice and ideas, but also the vantage point of what the hiring market is like out there for marketing talent. So 2023 has already started, of course, but while 2022 had its own unique characteristics in the hiring market, you kind of referred to that. What are you seeing so far in this new year?
Interesting things, that's for sure. So if I may, I'm going to go back to COVID, specifically March 2020, when all hiring came to a screeching halt. Fortunately for us, our company, while full-time headcount was frozen pretty much across the board, the work still needed to get done. So we saw a lot of demand for our marketing contractors to fill those gaps. So as you know, headcount budget and contractor budgets are two different buckets. So our marketing leaders were able to pull out of their discretionary budgets to bring in the skills they needed while the headcount was frozen. So in November of 2020, we started to see the first signs that companies were getting a little more comfortable with hiring again. And quite frankly, we were surprised. I mean, that was only 6 months after COVID started. It was still raging. Nobody knew, the world was upside down. But we started to see some requests come in. And then what started as a trickle just quickly exploded into an 18-month hiring frenzy, with candidates having three job offers at the same time, salaries and titles being inflated. In the end, it had gone so far the other way, it wasn't healthy. It really wasn't a healthy marketplace. So we started to see the first slowdown in hiring last summer. Nothing like the screeching halt in March of 2020, but definitely a pullback at that time. And interestingly, at that point, it was less macroeconomic related, less related to the broader market, than it was a realization that things were out of control. Kind of going back to what I said about the not healthy market.
Yeah.
Companies had well exceeded their headcount budgets for, by July, they had spent all their money on headcount and what they had budgeted for, let's say, outside recruiting firms. They were actually adding or exacerbating their attrition problems because they were hiring new employees at salaries that were well above the existing employees. And in one case for us, was going to be more than what the hiring manager was making. And their existing employees saw this and said, well, we're out.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. So it was more about kind of just a pause to say, whoa, we have been flying for like crazy for 18 months and we've got to take a look at things and maybe start rationalizing. What we're seeing now is definitely more macro related. We collectively in the US have been on the cusp of this potentially alleged recession for the last 6 months. Inflation's still really high. And, the media is all over stories of high profile companies doing layoffs. Microsoft and Amazon just announced, that they're being the latest to the party. And, while these cuts actually represent a really small percentage of the workforce, I think for Microsoft, it's something like 5%. They're still big absolute numbers. And interestingly, the latest jobs report, December's jobs report was really strong. Unemployment's still at historic lows. And consumers are still spending, but companies are spooked. And we're seeing that. So we're predicting that 2023 this year is going to be somewhat similar to 2020, fewer full-time hires and more contractors being brought in. Because like I said earlier, the work still needs to get done.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a new term for this. So we've all heard about quiet quitting.
Right.
Now we're talking about quietly hiring. which Gartner defines as, isn't this interesting? So Gartner defines this as when a company acquires new skills without hiring full-time people, which means they're either one, hiring short-term contractors, which I just talked about, or two, they're asking current employees to either do more or step into roles that they haven't done before. And, you know, this is an extreme example, but I read about this yesterday and I thought it was funny. So last year, you know, we know all about the airlines and their labor shortages. They don't have anyone to throw the bags on the plane, and it's caused all sorts of things. So Qantas, which is the Australian airline, actually asked their executives to address some of their labor shortage by rotating in as baggage handlers.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy, but think about it. Think about appreciating your employees more if you've had to do that yourself.
So
that's quietly hiring is the new buzzword about not hiring full-time employees and committing to that headcount, but bringing in folks who can do something in the interim, but you're not committing to headcount benefits, et cetera, or asking current employees to do more.
Great. Yeah, that's good to learn something new here. Yeah. So, you know, given all this, and you know, what should marketing leaders be looking out for? You know, what should, if they are bringing on new team members, what should their thought process be? What should they be looking out for?
Sure. Well, the reality is they can be more discretionary now than that we've seen in the past couple of years. You know, there are more people looking and fewer openings, which means you can be more selective and make sure you find someone at least most of the skills the job requires, if not all. You know, unlike the last few years where the candidate pool was so limited, people were getting offers after, you know, a single interview and multiple offers within a week. We had a candidate get 3 offers in 1 week. I mean, it was crazy. And these folks were getting, as I mentioned earlier, you know, really high salaries and inflated titles. And a lot of folks were being brought into roles they weren't ready for. You know, they just weren't ready to, let's say, be a director or VP, but the candidate pool was so limited that people said, okay, let's take a chance here. And you know what we started to see was a lot of buyer's remorse as a result, both on the candidate side and the hiring manager side. We've had candidates come back to us and say, wow, I didn't spend enough time thinking about this company. I was just jumping for the money. And hiring managers saying, wow, we thought this person could stretch into the role, but we were wrong. But even though it is more of a hiring market or hiring manager market, to circle back to the beginning of our conversation, you know, regardless of market conditions, it's important you still treat all candidates with respect and make sure to communicate on a timely basis throughout the interview process, even though you may have a little more leverage on the hiring company side. You know, one thing we like to say is it's important to remember there's a human behind every resume.
Yeah, that's great. And so speaking of that human, so what should the marketing candidates then be looking out for, since we talked about the hiring managers and the marketing leaders? What should candidates be looking out for in the months ahead?
I think the best answer to this question is managing expectations. You know, so as I mentioned, a lot of people got elevated titles and outsized comp packages over the last few years, and your next employer may not be able to match this. So, or match where you are. So it's important to be realistic about your expectations. And I would say be really clear in your mind, you know, decide ahead of time what salary you can live with if you do have to take a cut. And don't, you know, think about that ahead of time. Unfortunately, not everyone has gotten this message yet. Our director of candidate engagement just talked to a candidate, I think it was just last week, who had only 4 years of experience, not 4 years of marketing experience, but literally 4 years out of college.
Oh, wow.
And when we asked our usual question of what sort of salary are you looking for, her answer was a base salary of $150,000. Now, graciously, she said she's willing to go down to $130,000 for the right opportunity. But she's likely going to have a bit of a reality check as she goes through her job search.
Yeah.
So going back to expectations, you know, one other point. So understandably, many candidates we talk to still tell us they want a remote first job, which is really a euphemistic way of saying, I don't ever want to go into the office. Right. But that trend is definitely shifting. You know, we don't expect many companies go back to 5 days a week in the office, but more and more are requiring 3 or 4. You know, we've seen a lot of our clients do this. You know, Disney just made headlines by requiring everyone to go back 4 days a week in the office. Mm. And like I said, we're seeing a lot of our clients institute similar return to office policies. The one other thing I'd like to say to candidates, and this might sound a little strange coming from a recruiter, but try to see if you can stick it out. you know, for whatever reasons you're thinking about leaving, think about ways you may be able to affect change. Now, when we meet folks, we always ask candidates, why are you looking to make a change? And sometimes their answers aren't really that substantive. Yeah. So it may be as simple as talking to your manager about your concerns. She or he may have no idea that you're unhappy and may be more than willing to do what she or he needs to do to kind of address your concerns and make you feel good about staying. So, you know, of course, I always say if you've tried to affect change and things aren't changing, then you should certainly look to leave. But I encourage people to try to stick it out first if they can, if, like I said, they can make some changes. And I have one last piece of advice for candidates. I had a client tell me this years ago, and it has stuck with me, and I've used it so often. It's the advice of leave better than you came in. Yeah. Most people who are leaving a job are leaving because they're at least unhappy in some ways. But just remember, and this goes back to the brand piece we talked about and the feeling people have when they hear your name. You know, you walk into a new job all bright and chipper and ready to roll. Make sure when you're leaving, that's the person everyone remembers. Even if you're unhappy or frustrated, don't let that show, because no one will remember the person who walked in the door. They're going to remember the person who walked out the door. And that could have some implications for you down the line.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, Sue, thanks so much for joining the show. I've got one last question for you. You've given a lot of great advice already, but you know, if you had one piece of advice for those marketing leaders out there that are in the process of hiring or know that they're going to need to hire more team members, what would that be?
Sure. I think what we'd say is, you know, a lot of candidates use the word intentional to describe their search. And what they mean by that is they're not just going to take any job just to get out of wherever they are, to my point earlier. It has to be the right job. So similarly, we recommend that what we call intentional hiring. So this is going to sound really simple, but start with your current org chart. You know, spend some time thinking about the team you have, the skill sets you have, and where you truly have gaps. And then think about the people in your team who might actually be able to grow into the role, or, you know, have expressed, to the point earlier about trying to affect change, have expressed a desire to do more or do differently. You know, one option is to bring in an interim consultant to address your immediate skill gap needs, while also that person can help train your current staff to grow into the role. You know, we see this a lot. That's a lot of the reasons why we place interim folks with candidates, or excuse me, with clients. You know, so the bottom line is shop at home first. Yeah. And then one more thought on this, you know, as we get a new client, we start talking through why they need this person. We end up, inevitably you end up talking about their overall org chart, org structures. And, you know, sometimes you can be too close to your own team. So asking for an outside perspective can be really helpful. And, you know, especially in our case where our team is privy to so many different org structures, we can help shape your thinking. And, you know, sometimes these conversations lead us to collectively determine that the client actually should hire for a different role. Yeah. Or possibly they just need to restructure their team. Or, you know, in one case, as a client I recently discussed, you know, perhaps they actually do have the necessary skills on their team, but they really have as a personality or a leadership issue. So we encourage hiring managers to be really intentional about their hiring needs, especially if you're looking to backfill a position. You know, that's a really great time to reassess your org structure.
Great. Well, again, I'd like to thank Sue Keith, Corporate Vice President at Cirrus Talent, for joining the show. You can learn more about Sue and Cirrus Talent by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to the Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe on your podcast channel of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GREGKIHLSTROM.com. To get a copy of my latest book, House of the Customer, visit my website, or you can find it on Amazon or other retailers. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. it's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.